Bailey. Help him, dear father. Joseph, Jesus, and Mary, help my friend, Mr. Bailey.
Help my son, George, tonight.
He never thinks about himself, God. That's why he's in trouble.
George is a good guy. Give him a break, God.
I love him, dear Lord. What do for him tonight?
Please, God, something's the matter with Daddy. Please bring Daddy back.
Strange, isn't it? Each man's life touches so many other lives. When he isn't around, he leaves an awful hole, doesn't he?
I've heard of things like this. You've got me in some kind of a spell or something. Well, I'm going to get out of it. I'll get out of it. I know how, too.
Dave Lee here as we get ready for our live broadcast of a very special performance in just a little while. And I wanted to bring in a longtime friend. And one of the performers of this, not his first year, his ninth year, I believe, Jim Cunningham. Good evening.
Good evening to you, Dave. How are you?
Well, I'm doing well, but I don't have to get on that stage in a few minutes, and you do. Do you get butterflies still for every performance?
Absolutely. Every performance for everything I do live, I got the butterflies. It just goes with the territory.
Let's talk, and for folks who are just tuning in, unaware of the program, what is happening here tonight on WCCO Radio?
Well, at about 7:30 this evening, we are going to take the stage in the Promenade Ballroom of the beautiful St. Paul Hotel and do a radio version of the classic Christmas story, It's a Wonderful Life.
You're not talking to somebody else around here, are you? You know, this is me. You remember me? George Bailey.
George Bailey. George Bailey, whose ship has just come in?
You are an actor and also the producer of this.
That's true, yeah. So sometimes as an actor, you need to create your own work, and this is one of those instances where I said, boy, I'd like to be doing something around the holidays, a show that, and this show presented itself about 9 years ago, 10 years ago now, and we have been at the hotel with this It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio play, since 2006. This is our ninth season, and the entire cast has stayed the same, Dave, which that's hard. A lot of people listening probably think, well, what's the big deal there? It is a big deal to keep a group of actors together that long on one project. A lot of people come in and out. They, you know, other opportunities present themselves. Heck, two of the actors now don't even live in Minnesota anymore. The guy who plays George Bailey is a New York actor and lives in Manhattan, and the woman who plays Mary Hatch got married and is doing her acting from Atlanta. So they fly in for this production, and the hotel puts them up, and it's to keep everybody together for 9 years has been just a joy. Extraordinary.
In a few minutes, you'll be performing in front of a sold-out crowd. I know you had a sold-out crowd Friday. I know you had another one on Thursday night. And obviously, people are reacting to this. When you get out there, though, Jim, in your case, you're not playing a singular role. You're playing multiple roles tonight. So how do you prepare for something like that?
Well, that's the sort of the magic of theater is that that's what's required of you to give that each and every performance. And what John Malkovich, I heard an interview with John Malkovich, great actor, who said that live theater is really like a sporting event, and on any given night you get a different mix in the room between the audience and the actors, and anything could happen. So it's so exciting for me still after all these years to get up on stage in front of people, because even well rehearsed, even having done this thing for 9 years, there are still moments in every show that surprise me, or that I am not anticipating, or something strange happens, and you just have to roll with it. And so I one of the reasons you love live theater is because that's sort of, I'm going to use a crazy word here, but alchemy, the alchemy between the audience and the performers, it's a one-time deal. So you get what you get that night in that room, and then it disappears and it never happens again the same way.
Well, it's coming up in a few minutes. Rarely have you had to do a radio interview before you're doing the live radio version, which we're carrying here in just a few minutes on CCO. I should really let you prepare. But what do you do right before performance? Are you relaxed? Are you drinking coffee? What in the world are you doing now over the next 10-20 minutes.
Yeah, I will. I'll be singing some Christmas carols and jingling my bells, and there'll be a lot of water drinking and some cough dropping, and I'll be really focused. I kind of go through my script and arrange what I want arranged for the first act and get it all squared away. So when we see that on-air light. Mm-hmm. Bang on. I'm ready to give what I got.
Well, we're looking forward to the broadcast, as I know our listeners are tonight here on WCCO. Jim Cunningham, I know you've had great success in the past with this. Break a leg tonight. Congrats on these sold-out shows. I think that pretty much says it all.
Thanks so much, Dave.
Jim Cunningham, he's the producer, also a actor in this particular performance, and multiple roles. Along with Jimmy, before you leave, I got to ask you, get some other members of your troupe that do some multiple roles, too.
Yeah, the fellow who plays George Bailey plays only George Bailey, Phil Callan, and he flies in from New York for that. Adina Brumer, who plays Mary Hatch, comes from Atlanta, and she plays only Mary Hatch. But then myself, Ross Young, Kevin Dutcher, and Jennifer Edwards play everybody else in Bedford Falls, from his brother Harry to Violet Bick to Mr. Gower, the druggist, to Bert the cop, to Ernie the taxi driver, to Nick the bartender, to Martini the bartender. It just goes on and on and on and on, and we play all of them. Tonight, your pal John Williams is going to be in the show doing a couple of small roles that normally we do, but we are handing to John tonight. So that's exciting for us. And again, like I say, even well-prepared as I think we are, having done this show together for 9 years, suddenly there's a new guy on stage that we're all going to be reacting to. So that'll change the dynamic a little bit.
And I think our own Mike Lynch may make an appearance, too. So heads up. I'm just warning you ahead of time on that one, Jimmy.
Okay.
There might be some ad-libbing involved in that. I know you can handle that better than anybody.
I hope the weather's good.
Jim Cunningham, folks, you'll hear his performance in just a few minutes here on WCCO. It's A Wonderful Life, a live radio play. Much more to come. We'll talk with some of the other actors as we continue on WCCO Radio.
Back to my wife and kids. Help me, Clarence, please. Please. I want to live again. I want to live again.
It is almost showtime for It's a Wonderful Life, a radio play. We're carrying it live tonight on WCCO as it continues its sold-out performances at the St. Paul Hotel. It's a cast that's been together for 9 years, a long time. And the role of Mary Hatch, a very important role, has always been played by Adina Brumer. Now, Adina, this cast and the longevity is pretty special for all you guys to stay together this long for 9 years and continuing to reprise this role. Tell us about that.
You know, I think we all have just determined that we can't do our lives without this show. I can't do Christmas without this show. And it's, as an actor, it's rare to find a group of actors, like a company, because they don't really have that anymore. And to be with these people every year is a gift. It is a gift.
In just a few minutes, you'll be out on the stage. And what is it like for you when you get out there?
Magical. Jen, who plays all the other ladies in the show, she and I mess around all the time. She's kind of mean to me, but she likes it, so that's our relationship, and we just banter, and we get to sing, and we get to greet sometimes the audience, which is even better, because a lot of our audience has come repeatedly, and that's a treat to see familiar faces. And then when we finish the show, when we come down, we always greet our audience. And yesterday, actually, there was a woman, she was so overcome, she couldn't even speak. She just couldn't stop crying. And it's just, it's a magical thing. And I get choked up every time. I cry in the show as Mary, and people are always surprised that I'm really crying. But that's what the show does for me. And last night's show, at the end, something really touched me last night, and I could not stop crying. It was crazy. But I love these people. I love them.
So the role of Mary, prior to this, had you played the role?
Never. Never. And, in fact, I didn't even know Jim. So out of all the people in the cast, I was the only person Jim didn't know. And so he got some recommendations from some people, and he hired me sight unseen, and now we're family. But he still calls me the baby.
Is this the year you can't hear on? George B., I'll love you till the day I die.
As you prepare for your role here in a few minutes, it's a radio presentation, basically, which will carry live tonight. How does that differ from what you normally do?
Well, you know, so for this, we do have our scripts in our hands. So that's the biggest change. That's the biggest difference, because we've got our scripts in our hands. But, of course, we've been doing it for so long that there, it's easy to put it down or not even look at it. Plus, we present it as if we were on radio. So in this case, we don't necessarily turn to each other like you would in theater. You'd look each other in the eyes. This way, we have it out so the audience can see our faces and they can make the pictures in their minds. And a lot of the audience, they'll close their eyes or they won't turn their chair so they can hear it just like they used to hear it. But that's the major difference. We've got our script, and then also we're playing out instead of to each other until the end. And that ending part we all do to each other, and it just turns into this beautiful thing. And people forget that we're holding scripts. They don't even notice.
Why is it selling out? It's sold out again tonight.
Yeah, because I think, one, repeat business, but two, it's just a beautiful story. You know, I mean, who doesn't love the story of one man touching so many other people? You know, don't. And I mean, this year for me, I've been thinking about that a lot, mm-hmm. about just being better. And so I think it's just a way of connecting to the season, which is a beautiful time of year. And it's just a phenomenal story. Plus, you know, when you have these people, Ross Young and Kevin Dutcher and Chris Whiting and Phil and Jen and Jim, these are phenomenal people. And we all just bring our hearts to it. And I think the audience sees that.
As it's grown up and matured over 9 years, how is it different?
It is different. In these past 2 years, we had a director come in. We had Mark Bergeron come in to sort of tweak it a little bit. And that's when we sort of focused on taking it out almost all the time. That has helped a lot. And then every once in a while, we'll go back to the movie and see things. So this year, I think we just, it's a little refreshed and renewed, but I think there's so much more heart. We've always had heart, but this year feels almost bursting with love and joy for this show. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And there's a great passion there.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. I mean, when I would have to have day jobs, I'm very lucky. In February, I didn't have to have a day job anymore. But when I would have to go find a day job, I would tell people right up front, 2 weeks in December, I'm gone. And if they couldn't handle that, that was okay. Because I can't not do this show. It's a part of my DNA almost now. You know, these people are so dear to me and this show and the St. Paul Hotel and our audiences.
Some folks are lucky enough to have seen it the last few nights, or tonight they're part of that crowd. But for all of our listeners, and it's a lot of them out there listening on the radio, I bet they'll pick up on that passion pretty quick.
I think so. It's just, and I'm excited, too, you know, for the rebroadcast, because I'm going to get to listen to it for the first time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm super excited because I haven't heard, you know, we're in it and we can't see it. Mm-hmm. So to be able to hear it in a way that most people can hear it, I mean, I'm so connected to it, I'm going to hear it differently. But to just have that experience, I cannot wait. Cannot wait.
Well, Dina, we're excited to hear you as Mary Hatch in just a few minutes.
Thank you so much.
And I better let you get down to stage or I'll be the bad guy of all time here.
All right. Thank you.
It's A Wonderful Life, a live radio play coming to you in just a few minutes here on 830 WCCO Radio.
To my big brother George, the richest man in town.
Oh,
We'll be back with more at intermission. But now, let's go live to the Promenade Ballroom at the St. Paul Hotel for It's a Wonderful Life.
Like the best in news and the best in sports, and you like the finest music shows. Keep a doing what you do and keep your radio tuned to WCCO. Comes the rain, comes the snow. Hear the weather report on CCO. It's a station that rates the cheers. Good neighbor and good friend for 22 years. After all, who else would know it any better than you? You've been listening to CCO. Keep a doing what you do and keep your radios tuned to WCCO. WCCO.
830, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Boys and girls, young and old, old and new, greetings from WCCO Radio. We're coming to you live this frosty evening from the Promenade Ballroom of the beautiful St. Paul Hotel in Minnesota's capital city, right here in the U.S. of A. It's 1946. This is your friend John Williams. Thanks so much for tuning in to this Christmas cavalcade tonight. And special thanks to our friends from Starkey Hearing Technologies and SoundPoint Audiology Centers. I'll tell you, folks, you may applaud if you like. We've got a terrific, really intelligent, awfully good live audience with us this evening in St. Paul. Am I right? So now you know they are here. Well, we just enjoyed a lovely dinner here at the St. Paul Hotel. I'm right, right? That was a good dinner, right? And we've heard some beautiful Christmas carols sung by tonight's performers, and now we're almost ready for the big show. First, I'd like to welcome our national audience who are listening on the Columbia Broadcasting System from coast to coast and to all the ships at sea. Our sailors, soldiers, Marines, and flyers listening all over the world on Armed Forces Radio, America salutes you. A delightful evening planned for you tonight. So to start things off, here's the WCCO Radio News with Skip Watson.
Hello, everybody. Skip Watson here at our St. Paul News Desk with the latest WCCO 830 Radio News. WCCO News, straight from the wire to you. Here's your news update for today, December 20th, 1946. To politics first, and after much speculation, former Minnesota Governor Harold E. Stassen announced today that he will indeed seek the Republican Party nomination for the 1948 presidential election. The announcement was made at Dayton's department store in downtown Minneapolis, where Mr. Stassen told reporters, and I quote, "I am a serious candidate for the Republican nomination in 1948. A Minnesota governor running for president. We'll probably never see that again in our lifetime. In world headlines, this is the year that was. The United Nations held its first meeting last month on Long Island, and this included its newest member nation, Siam. Yes, Siam. 1946 was a big year for women as they finally received the right to vote in Belgium, Romania, Yugoslavia, Argentina, and the province of Quebec. Glad to see the rest of the world is finally catching up with the good old USA. Sadly, this year, we said goodbye to boxing great Jack Johnson, celebrated author H.G. Wells, writers Damon Runyon and Gertrude Stein, and Washington Senators pitching great Walter Johnson. Farewell, big train, and Godspeed. On a happy note, BBC Radio is back on the air for the first time since the end of the war. So to all of our friends and allies across the pond, we send a hearty cheerio and congratulations, a what? Turning now to sports. Two games on the slate in the National Hockey League last night. The Boston Bruins improved to a 9-6-7 record with a 3-2 win over the New York Rangers in Beantown. In the other game on the schedule, the Chicago Blackhawks were just too good for the struggling Red Wings, edging Detroit 5-2. Eveleth, Minnesota native Frank Brimsek stood on his head, stopping 29 shots between the pipes for Chicago. Who knows? Maybe someday we'll have a National Hockey League team based right here in St. Paul. Wouldn't that be wild? As we move toward Christmas and the completion of our first full calendar year since the end of the war, we here at WCCO 830 News thought it would be interesting to take a brief look at figures released today, outlining the current cost of living in these United States. Jobs are in short supply at the moment, and if you're lucky enough to have one, you'll probably earn about $2,500 this year. If you feel good about your job and you'd like to buy a new house, you'd better have in the neighborhood of $5,600 handy. Whoa. Now, you're going to want to park a shiny new car in that driveway. That's going to set you back another $1,100 or so, not to mention the 15 cents a gallon for gas. That's right, 15 cents a gallon. Ouch. That's the rising cost of looking good on Main Street USA as we inch toward 1947. And now for a look at WCCO weather, here's the doctor. Please help me welcome Mike Lynch.
Hey, Skip. Hi, everybody. You want the weather report?
Oh, I got bad news for you. It is going to be so cold.
How cold?
We're talking Arctic abyss. We're talking polar plunge. It'll be as cold as a kiss from a mother-in-law, as cold as a boss's handshake, and even as cold as a corporate boardroom. In fact, it's going to be so cold. It's going to, you asked for it, it's going to be so cold that you'll start seeing Sid Hartman's picture on bank thermometers. Whoa. And we're talking below zero weather for the next several weeks or so. Actually, that's not the forecast, but it's so good to have you folks here tonight here at the St. Paul Hotel and Lowe's listening on WCCO Radio. No matter how cold it gets in the winter, we got a lot of warm hearts here. We got a lot of warm greetings from our radio station to everybody here at the St. Paul Hotel, and this is going to be a great show. So take it away, Skip. There he is.
It's going to be cold for a while, so take extra care on those icy roads and bridges as you head through the river and over the woods to grandmother's house this holiday season. I'm Skip Watson, and that's the latest WCCO news and weather. Remember, if you've got good news, you heard it right here on WCCO 830. And now, back to your host for this evening, John Williams.
Thank you, Skip. Thank you, Mike. Weren't they great, everybody? All right, folks, here we go. We got a fantastic story for you this evening, perfect for the holiday season. WCCO Radio is proud to present It's a Wonderful Life live from the St. Paul Hotel. This is the story of none other than George Bailey, citizen of Bedford Falls, New York. George Bailey, who more than anything under the sun wanted to see the world, the wonderful and exciting world that lay somewhere beyond the limits of his hometown. He's a typical American. He might be you. He might be me. His dreams of glory. He lives in hope. He loves and doubts. He rushes home on Friday nights. And only Providence puts a final value on his service to humanity. Our story starts before the wars when life was simpler. So without further ado, folks, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, WCCO Radio invites you to sit back, relax, enjoy live from the St. Paul Hotel. It's a Wonderful Life.
George is a good guy. Give him a break, God.
Joseph, Jesus, and Mary, help my friend, Mr. Bailey.
Help my son, George, tonight.
He never thinks about himself, God. That's why he's in trouble.
I owe everything to George Bailey. Help him, dear Father.
I love him, dear Lord. Watch over him tonight.
Please, God. Something's the matter with Daddy. Please bring Daddy back.
Hello, Joseph. Trouble?
It looks like we'll have to send someone down, sir. A lot of people are asking for help for a man named George Bailey.
George Bailey? Yes. Tonight's his crucial night. You're right. We'll have to send someone down immediately. Whose turn is it?
That's why I came to see you, sir. It's that clockmaker's turn again.
Clarence. Oh, Clarence. Hasn't got his wings yet, has he?
We passed him up right along, sir, because you know he's got the IQ of a rabbit.
Yes, yes. But he's got the faith of a child. Simple. Joseph, send for Clarence.
You sent for me, sir?
Yes, Clarence. A man down on Earth needs our help.
Splendid. Is he sick?
Oh, no, it's worse. He's discouraged. At exactly 10:45 p.m. tonight, Earth time, that man will be thinking seriously of throwing away God's greatest gift.
Oh, dear, his life. Then I've only an hour to dress. What are they wearing now?
You will spend that hour getting acquainted with George Bailey.
Sir, if I should accomplish this mission, might I perhaps win my wings? I've been waiting over 200 years now, and people are beginning to talk.
What's that book you've got there?
The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, sir. I was reading it when you sent for me.
Oh, fine book. Excellent. Well, you do a good job with this George Bailey, and we'll see about your wings.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now listen carefully, Clarence. When George Bailey was a boy, two events occurred that you should see. One happened when George and his brother Harry were out sledding on the ice.
Yippee!
Who's that?
That's your problem, George Bailey. That's him when he was 12, back in 1919. Something happens here you'll have to remember later on.
And here comes the scare baby, my kid brother, Harry Bailey.
I'm not scared.
Come on, Harry, come on down.
Oh, dear, Harry's fallen through the ice.
I'm coming, Harry. Make a chain, gang. A chain. We'll save you, Harry.
So his brother fell through the ice, but George saved him.
Yes, Clarence. Ever since, George has had a bad ear. All that icy water, you understand?
Bad ear, yes, sir.
The other event came a few months later. George had an after-school job at Mr. Gower's drugstore.
It's me, Mr. Gower, George Bailey.
You're late.
Yes, sir.
Hello, George.
Hello, Mary. Hello, Violet.
2 cents worth of shoelaces, Violet?
Mary was here first. I'm still thinking.
Shoelaces?
Please, Georgie. I like him. You like every boy. What's wrong with that?
Here you are.
Well, bye, Georgie. See you later, Mary.
Made up your mind yet, Mary?
I'll take chocolate.
With coconuts?
I don't like coconuts.
You don't like coconuts? Say, brainless, don't you know where coconuts come from? Look at here, from Tahiti, Fiji Islands, the Coral Sea.
What's that you got there? A new magazine? I never saw it before.
Of course you never. Only us explorers can get it. I've been nominated for membership in the National Geographic Society. Let me get your ice cream.
Is this the ear you can't hear on? George Bailey, I'll love you till the day I die.
I'm going out exploring someday, and you watch. I'm going to have a couple of harems and maybe 3 or 4 wives. Wait and see.
George, George.
Yes, sir.
You are not paid to be a canary.
Yes, sir.
What's that George just picked up?
It's a telegram for Mr. Gower. He found out this morning that his son died of influenza.
Oh, how awful.
Yes, he spent the afternoon drowning his grief in whiskey.
Mr. Gower? Do you want something? Anything?
No.
Anything I can do back here?
No.
Oh, no, I'll get them, sir. What's this bottle, Mr. Gower?
Never mind that. Take those capsules over to Mrs. Blaine.
Yes, sir. They have the diphtheria over there, haven't they, sir?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a charge, sir?
Yes, a charge.
Mr. Gower,
I'll get going.
Yes, sir, but Mr. Gower...
What is
Mr.
it?
Gower, you... That bottle you used, you put something wrong in those capsules.
Who do you think you are talking to?
Oh, you're hurting my sore ear.
Did you hear what I said? Get out of here.
Oh, Mr. Gower, you don't know what you're doing. You put something wrong in those capsules. I know you're unhappy. You got that telegram and you're upset. It wasn't your fault, Mr. Gower, but look, you used this bottle to make up the pills. It's poison.
Poison?
Don't hit my sore ear again.
Poison? Oh, George, George.
All I wanted was to make sure, Mr. Gower. I won't tell anyone. I know what you're feeling. I won't ever tell a soul. Hope to die, I won't.
Oh, George.
Did he ever tell anyone about those pills?
Not a soul.
Did he ever marry the girl? Did he ever go exploring?
We'll get there soon enough, Clarence. When George Bailey grew up, he wanted to go to college, but that just wasn't the money. So he worked 4 years in the Building and Loan Association.
Building and Loan Association?
George's father was in the building and loan business, along with George's Uncle Billy. High ideals, low bank accounts. George worked for his father, saving enough to see him through the university. That summer, though, he was going to Europe. George got a job on a cattle boat and was ready to do a little traveling before college. So he was out shopping for a suitcase.
How about this, George? An overnight bag. Genuine English cowhide. Combination lock. Fitted up with brushes, combs...
Nope. Now look, Joe, now look. I want a big one.
I want you to take a good look at that face, Clarence.
Who is it?
George Bailey.
Oh, you mean the kid that had his ears slapped back by the druggist.
That's the kid.
Well, he's all grown up, eh? It's a good face. I like it. I like George Bailey.
Now, look, Joe, it's got to be big, see? I don't want one for one night. I want something for 1,001 nights. With plenty of room for labels from Italy and Cairo, Samarkand, a great big one.
I see. A flying carpet, huh? I don't suppose you're talking about something like this, are you?
Now you're talking. Gee whiz, I could use this as a raft in case the boat sunk. How much does this one cost?
No charge.
How's that? That's my trick ear, Joe. Sounded as if you said no charge.
That's right.
Hey, what's my name doing on it?
A little present from old man Gower. Came down and picked it out himself.
He did? Well, what do you know about that? My old boss.
Yeah, what boat you sailing on?
Oh, I'm working across on a cattle boat.
A cattle boat?
It's okay. I like cows. Thanks for everything, Joe.
Bon voyage. Take care of yourself, George.
Where's George off to in such a hurry? And who are those fellows?
Well, he's on his way home, and those are his friends. Ernie, the cab driver, and Bert, the cop.
Hey, Ernie.
Hiya, George.
Hiya, Bert. Hey, George, what's the suitcase for?
I'm a rich tourist today, fellas. How about drive me home in style, Ernie?
Sure, Your Highness. Hop in the cab. And for the carriage trade, I put on my hat.
Good afternoon, Mr. Bailey. Looks like you're ready to get out of here.
Well, hello, Violet. Say, you look good. That's some dress you got on there.
This old thing. Why, I only wear it when I don't care how I look. I'll see you later.
Say, how would you like to,
Yes.
You want to come along, Bert? We'll show you the town.
Oh, thanks. I think I'll go home. See what the wife's doing. Family man.
Well, it's the night before George's big trip to Europe. His bags were packed. He was all set to go.
Be kind to your web-footed friend, or a doc, maybe somebody's mother.
George, Harry, you're shaking the house down. Stop it.
Let him alone. I wish I was up there with him.
Oh, Harry will tear his suit. George, Harry, come down to dinner this minute. Everything's getting cold, and you know we've been waiting for you. Sit down and have dinner.
Whoopie.
Well, aren't you going to finish dressing for your graduation party? Look at you.
Well, I don't care. It's Georgie's tux. Hey, Pop, can I have the car? I got to take over a lot of plates and things.
What plates?
Mom, I'm chairman of the Eats Committee. We only need a couple dozen.
Oh, no, you don't, Harry. Not my best Haviland.
Oh, let him have the plates, Mother. Boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Hard to realize it's my last night in the old Bailey boarding house.
We're sure gonna miss you, George.
Oh, I'm gonna miss you, too, Pop. Say, what's wrong? You look tired.
Had another tussle with old Henry Potter today.
Oh.
I thought when we put him on the board of directors, he'd ease up on us.
I wonder what's eating that old money-grubbing buzzard anyway.
He's a sick man. Frustrated and sick. Sick in his mind, sick in his soul. He's got one. Hates everybody that has anything he can't have. Hates us mostly, I guess.
Gangway! Hey, George, can I borrow your tuxedo studs?
Sure, help yourself, Harry.
Well, where are they? In your suitcase?
I'm not taking a tuxedo on a cattle boat, you know.
All right. I'll find them. Hey, why don't you come to dance tonight?
What, and be bored to death?
Well, you couldn't want a better death. Lots of pretty girls. Wow, I gotta hurry. So long, Pop.
So long, son. No gin tonight.
Oh, Pop.
No, sir. Not one drop.
Ah.
Did I act like that when I graduated from high school?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, George, we wish we could send Harry to college with you. Your mother and I talked it over half the night.
Well, we have that all figured out. You see, Harry will take my job at the building and loan, work there 4 years, then he'll go.
Yeah, he's pretty young for that job.
Well, no younger than I was.
You were born older, George.
How's that?
I say you were born older. I suppose you've decided what you're going to do when you get out of college?
Oh, well, you know, what I've always talked about. Building things, design new buildings, plan modern cities.
Still after that first million before you're 30?
No, I'll settle for half that in cash.
And of course, it's just a hope. But you wouldn't consider coming back to the building alone, would you? I know it's early to talk about it.
Oh, I couldn't face being cooped up for the rest of my life in that shabby little office. Oh, I'm sorry, Pop. I didn't mean that remark. But this business of nickels and dimes and spending all your life trying to figure out how to save 3 cents on a length of pipe, I'd go crazy. I want to do something big and something important.
No, George. I feel that in a small way, we are doing something important. Satisfying a fundamental urge. It's deep in the race of a man to want his own roof and walls and fireplace. And we're helping him get those things in our shabby little office.
I know, Dad. I wish I felt... But I've been hoarding pennies like a miser in order to... Most of my friends have already finished college. I feel like if I don't get away, I bust.
Yeah. You're right, son. This town's no place to live if you aren't willing to crawl to Potter. You've got talent, and I've seen it. You get yourself an education and then get out of here.
Pop, do you want a shock? I think you're a great guy. Say, I think I'm going to go down on Old Main Street, you know, last night in town and all.
Have a good time, son.
Thanks.
Is that?
Oh, that's Violet Bick.
You mean the little girl from the candy counter?
That's right.
Well, she grew up, too.
Hello, Georgie Porgy.
Oh, hello, Vi.
What gives?
Nothing.
Well, where are you going?
Oh, I'll probably end up at the library.
Georgie, don't you ever get tired of just reading about things?
Yes. What are you doing tonight?
Not a thing.
Are you game, Vi? What do you say we make a night of it?
Oh, I'd love it, Georgie. What'll we do?
Let's go out in the fields and take off our shoes and walk in the grass.
Huh?
Then we can go up to Stewart Lake. It's beautiful up there in the moonlight. We can swim. Then we can climb Mount Bedford and smell the pines. And we'll watch the sunrise against the peaks. And we'll stay up there the whole night. And everybody will be talking. And there will be a terrific scandal.
George, have you gone crazy? Walk in the grass in my bare feet? Well, it's 10 miles up there to Mount Bedford. Oh, you think to... Oh, you.
Okay, just forget about the whole thing.
Forget about what, George?
Oh, nothing. Oh, hiya, Marty. I guess it's old home week.
Yeah, I got home from college yesterday. You remember my kid sister Mary, don't you? Do me a favor. Will you walk her home for me?
What, me? Oh, I don't know, Marty. I don't want to be a wet nurse.
Ah, come on, be a sport. Besides, you walking her home will be the thrill of her life.
Hello.
Hi.
Say, you wouldn't mind walking Mary home, would you, George?
Of course not. Is that all right with you, Mary?
Fine by me.
Great, thanks. Mary, tell Ma not to wait up.
You look at me as if you didn't know me.
Well, I don't.
You've passed me on the street almost every day.
Me?
Uh-huh.
Uh-uh. That was a little girl named Mary Hatch. That wasn't you.
So George walked Mary home. Is that important, Joseph?
I'd say it is. Because even though Mary lived only four blocks away, it took them 2 hours to get there.
Buffalo gals, won't you come out tonight? Come out tonight. Come out tonight. Buffalo gals, won't you come out tonight? And dance by the light of the moon.
Hot dog. Gee whiz. Just like an organ, Mary. Gee whiz.
Beautiful.
Oh, you know something? If it wasn't me talking, I'd say you were the prettiest girl in town.
Why don't you say it?
Well, I don't know. I just might. Say, how old are you anyway?
18.
18?
Too young or too old?
Oh, no. Just right. Your age fits you. Hey, look where we are.
The old Granville house.
Yeah, I gotta throw a rock.
Oh, no, don't. I love that old house.
Oh, well, no. Don't you know about deserted houses? You make a wish, and then you throw a rock.
But, George, it's such a lovely old place. I wish I lived there.
In there? I wouldn't live in there if I was a ghost. Now, watch this. Hey! Not a bad shot, huh? Pretty good shot. Broke a window, huh?
What's your wish, George?
Well, not just one wish, Mary. A whole hatful. I'm shaking the dust of this crummy little town off my feet, and I'm going to see the world. Italy, Greece, the Parthenon, the Colosseum. Then I'm going to come back here and go to college and see what they know. And then I'm going to build things. I'm going to build skyscrapers 100 stories high. I'm going to build bridges a mile long. And then I'll build airfields. And then I'll... Oh, hey, what are you going to do? Oh, you're going to throw a rock, too. That's a pretty good shot, Mary. What'd you wish for?
Oh, no. If I tell you, it may not come true.
Hey. Hey, Mary, come on. What do you want, huh? Well, you want the moon? All you gotta do is say the word now, and I'll throw a lasso around it, and I'll pull it down for you. Say, that's a pretty good idea. I'll give you the moon.
I'll take it. Then what?
Then what? You could swallow it, you know, and, well, it would all dissolve, you see, and moonbeams would shoot out of your fingers and your toes and, well, the ends of your hair, and am I talking too much here?
Yes. Why don't you just kiss her instead of talking her to death?
Who's that?
Old man Collins on his front porch.
Ah, youth is wasted on the wrong people.
Hey! Hey, mister, come back out here. I'll show you some kissing that'll put hair back on your head. You come back out here.
Yo!
Uncle Billy, what's wrong?
George, get in the car quick. Your father's had a stroke.
What? Oh, no, I'm sorry. Mary, I gotta go. Did you call the doctor?
Yes, Campbell.
George's father died that night, Clint.
Oh, dear.
So, of course, George couldn't go to Europe. That fall, just as he was ready to leave for college, the directors of the building and loan held a meeting. They were going to appoint a successor.
I want the board to know that George gave up his trip to Europe to help straighten things out here these past few months, and it was greatly appreciated. I think that's all we'll need you for, George. Good luck to you at school. I know you're anxious to make a train.
Yes, I have a taxi waiting downstairs.
Mr. Chairman, I claim this institution is not necessary to this town. Therefore, I make a motion to dissolve the building and loan and turn its assets and liabilities over to the receiver.
It's too soon after Peter Bailey's death to discuss chloroforming the building and loan. It was his faith and devotion that are responsible for this organization.
I'll go further than that. I'll say that to the public, Peter Bailey was the building and loan.
Oh, that's fine, Potter, coming from you. Considering you probably drove to his grave.
Peter Bailey was not a businessman. That's what killed him. Oh, I don't mean any disrespect to him, God rest his soul. He was a man of high ideals, so-called. But ideals without common sense can ruin this town, and what does that get us? A discontented, lazy rabble instead of a thrifty working class. And all because a few starry-eyed dreamers like Peter Bailey fill their heads with a lot of impossible hooey. Now, I say...
But just a minute. Now, you hold on here, Mr. Potter. Now, you're right when you say my father was no businessman. I know that. Why he ever started this cheap penny ante building and loan, I'll never know. But neither you nor anybody else can say anything against his character, because his whole life was... Why, in the 25 years since he and Uncle Billy started this thing, he never once thought of himself. Isn't that right, Uncle Billy?
You bet that's right.
Yeah, he didn't save enough to send Harry's money to send Harry to school, let alone me. But he did help a few people get out of your slums, Mr. Potter. And what's wrong with that? Why, here, you're all businessmen here. Doesn't it make them better citizens? Doesn't it make them better customers? You, what'd you say a minute ago? They had to wait and save their money before they even ought to think of a decent home? Wait? Wait for what? Until their children grow up and leave them? Until they're so old and broken down that they... Do you know how long it takes a working man to save $5,000? Now, you just remember this, Mr. Potter, that this rabble you're talking about, well, they do most of the working and the paying and the living and the dying in this community. Is it too much to have them work and pay and live and die in a couple of decent rooms and a bath? Anyway, my father didn't think so. To him, people were human beings. But to you, a warped, frustrated old man, they're cattle. Well, in my book, he died a much richer man than you'll ever
be. I'm not interested in your book. I'm talking about the building and loan.
Oh, I know very well what you're talking about. You're talking about something you can't get your fingers on, and it's galling you. That's what you're talking about. Well, I've said too much here. You're the board. You can do what you want with this thing. No, just one more thing, though. This town needs this measly one-horse institution, if only to have some place for people to go without crawling to Potter. Now, come on, Uncle Billy.
Sentimental hogwash. I want my motion.
They're just coming out of the board meeting. I'll have to call you back. What happened, George? All we heard was a lot of yelling.
Boy, Matilda, you should have heard George.
Yeah, they're voting us down in there.
Oh.
George, get out of here. You missed your boat trip. You want to miss college, too? Don't worry about the board. They're putting us out of business. So what? I can get another job. I'm only 55.
You're 58.
George, they voted Potter down. We're still in business.
We're still in business.
There's only one condition. Only one condition.
What's that?
That's the best part of it. They've appointed George here as executive secretary to take his father's place.
Oh, no, but Uncle Billy...
You can keep him on. That's all right. As secretary, you can hire anyone you like.
Oh, Dr. Campbell, now let's get this thing straight. I'm leaving. I'm leaving right now. I'm going to college. This is my last chance. Uncle Billy here, he's your man.
But George... They'll vote with Potter otherwise.
I know. George didn't go.
That's right. Not only that, but he gave his school money to his brother Harry and sent him to college. Harry became a football star, made second team All-American.
Yes, but what happened to George? And what happened to that good-looking girl, you know, Mary?
Oh, George saw her now and then. Not very often, though, because Mary went away to school, too. Anyway, George waited 4 years more for Harry to come back and take over the building alone. Then he could still see the world. He planned to work in the oil fields of Venezuela.
There she blows. Say, Uncle Billy, you know what the three most wonderful sounds on Earth are?
Uh-huh. Breakfast is served, lunch is served, dinner is served.
No, no, no. Anchor chains, plane motors, and train whistles.
Right, right.
Oh, here comes the professor now.
Well, if it isn't George Geographic Explorer Bailey. Uncle Billy, you haven't changed a bit.
Nobody ever changes around here. You know that.
Boy, am I glad to see you, Harry.
Say, where's Mother?
Oh, she's home cooking the fatted calf. Come on, let's go.
No, no, no. Wait. This is Ruth Dakin.
Oh, Ruth Dakin Bailey, if you don't mind.
Huh?
Well, I wired you. I had a surprise. Here she is. Meet the wife.
Well, what do you know? Wife.
Well, how do you do? What am I doing? What am I doing? Congratulations. Harry, why don't you tell somebody? Say, what's a pretty girl like you doing marrying this two-headed brother of mine?
Well, I'll tell you, it's purely mercenary. My father offered him a job.
Oh, Harry gets you and a job? His cup runneth over. Come on, Ruth, let's start ahead. We'll leave the bags for the fellas.
All right.
George, about that job, Ruth spoke out of turn. I never said I'd take it. You've been holding the bag here for 4 years, and, well, I won't let you down. Hey, I forgot the bags. I'll be right back.
Oh, of course I heard Harry speak of you, Uncle Billy, and you look just like I pictured you.
Well, I want to tell you what. We are going to give you the biggest party this town ever saw. Isn't that right, George?
What's that?
A party.
Sure, party, yeah.
George. That's all Harry ever talks about.
Ruth, this, what about this job?
Oh, well, my father owns a glass factory in Buffalo. He wants to get Harry started in the research business.
Is it a good job?
Oh, yes, very. Well, not much money, but a good future, you know. Harry is just a genius at research. My father just fell in love with him.
And you did, too.
Oh, I sure did.
So Harry took the job.
Yes. And that night, the homecoming for Harry became his wedding party. Uncle Billy familiarized himself with the spirits.
Oh, boy, I feel so good. I can spit in Potter's eye. I think I will. What do you say? Maybe I should just go home, huh?
Yeah.
You just point me in the right direction.
Right down there.
That way, huh? Okay, old building and loan pal. I'll see you later. I'm all right.
George?
Yeah. I'm out here on the porch, Mother. I just thought I'd get some air.
Well, how do you like the new sister-in-law?
Oh, she's swell.
Looks like she'll keep Harry on his toes.
Yep. Keep him out of Bedford Falls, anyway.
George, do you know that Mary Hatch is back from school?
Yeah.
Nice girl, Mary.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you stop your grumbling. You give me one good reason why you shouldn't call on Mary.
Well, Sam Wainwright. Sam's crazy about her.
Well, she's not crazy about him.
Well, now, how do you know that? Did she discuss it with you?
Well, besides, Sam is away in New York, and you're right here in Bedford Falls.
And all's fair in love and war.
I don't know about war.
Oh, all right, Mother. I think I'll go out and find the girl and do a little passionate necking.
Oh, George.
Bye, Mrs. Bailey. Oh, say, you want any books from the library?
The library? George, you go and see Mary. You hear?
Be passing by.
Your mother just phoned and said you were on your way over to pay me a visit.
just called you? Well, how did she know?
Well,
I didn't tell anybody. I just went for a walk, and I happened to be passing by. I just went for a walk, that's all. When'd you get back?
Tuesday. Would you like to come in?
Well, I guess, since I'm here.
Say, where'd you get that dress?
Do you like it?
It's all right. I thought you'd go back to New York with Sam and Francie and the rest of them.
Oh, I worked there a couple of vacations, but I don't know. Guess I was homesick.
Homesick for Bedford Falls?
Yes, and my family and everything. Would you like to sit down?
All right, for a minute. You know, I still can't understand it. I didn't tell anybody I was coming over here.
Would you rather leave?
Oh, no. I don't want to be rude. Well, I see it still smells like pine needles in here.
Thank you. It was nice about Harry and Ruth, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. That's all right.
Well, don't you like her?
Well, of course I like her. She's a peach.
Oh, it's just marriage in general you're not enthusiastic about, huh?
No. Marriage is okay for Harry and Sam Wainwright, your brother Marty, and you and anybody...
Mary! Who's down there with you? It's George Bailey, Mother! George Bailey? What does he want? I don't know.
What do you want, George?
Me? Not a thing. I just came in here to get warm.
He's making violent love to me, Mother. You tell him to go right back home and don't you leave this house. Sam Wainwright promised to call from New York tonight, didn't he? I guess so.
How about some music? Let me put on a record. Buffalo gals,
what are you singing for? Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, your mother needn't... You know, I didn't come here to...
What did you come here for?
I don't know. You tell me. You're the one who's supposed to have all the answers. You tell me.
Why don't you just go home?
That's where I'm going. I don't know why I came here in the first place. Good night.
Good night.
Mary, the telephone, it's Sam. I don't get it.
Hello, Sam.
I forgot my hat.
Hee-haw. Hello, Sam. How are you?
Oh, great. Gee, it's good to hear your voice again.
Oh. Well, that's awfully sweet of you, Sam. There's an old friend of yours here, George Bailey.
You mean old Mossback Judge?
Yes, old Mossback George.
Hee-haw, put him on.
Wait a minute, I'll call him. George!
He doesn't want to speak to George, you idiot!
He does so, he asked for him. George, Sam wants to speak to you.
Hello, Sam.
Well, Judge Bailiofsky. Hey, fine pal you are. What are you trying to do, steal my girl?
What do you mean? Nobody's trying to steal anything. Here's Mary.
No, wait a minute. I want to talk to both of you. Tell Mary to get on the extension.
Mother's on the extension.
My apple!
We can both hear you. George, just put your head a little closer.
Okay.
There, that's better. We're listening, Sam.
I got a big deal coming up that's going to make us all rich. George, you remember that night at Martini's Bar when you told me about making plastics out of soybeans?
Huh? Soybeans, yeah.
Well, my father checked into it with George, see? And now he's going to build a factory outside of Rochester. How do you like that?
Rochester? Well, why Rochester?
Well, why not? Can you think of anything better?
I don't know. What about right here in Bedford Falls? You remember that old tool and machinery works?
You tell your father he can get that for a song. And all the labor he wants, too. Half the town was thrown out of work when they closed down.
That's so. Well, I'll tell him. Hey, that sounds great. Oh, baby, I knew you'd come through. Now, here's the point. Mary, you're in on this, too. Now, listen. Have you got any money?
Money? Yeah, little, yeah.
Well, now, listen. I want you to put every cent you got into our stock, you hear? And, George, I may have a job for you. That is, unless you're still married to that old broken-down building and loan. This is the biggest thing since radio, and I'm letting you in on the ground floor. Oh, Mary? Mary?
I'm here.
Will you tell that guy I'm giving him the chance of a lifetime, you hear? The chance of a lifetime.
He says it's the chance of a lifetime.
Give me that phone! Now you listen to me. I don't want any plastics. I don't want any ground floors. And I don't want to get married ever to anyone. Do you understand that? I want to do what I want to do, and you're... And you're... Oh, Mary, Mary!
George! George!
Mary, Mary!
So, where are you two kids going on this here honeymoon?
Where are we going? Look at this. There's the kitty earning $2,000. Here, come on, count it, Mary.
I feel like a bootlegger's wife with all this money.
We're going to shoot the works, Ernie. A whole week in New York, a whole week in Bermuda, the highest hotels, the hottest music, and the prettiest wife.
So you're finally getting out of Bedford Falls, huh? Then what?
Then what, honey?
After that, who cares?
Hot dog! That does it. I haven't kissed you since...
Hey, George. George, look over at the bank. There's something funny going on over there. It looks like a run.
Huh? Pull over a minute, will you, Ernie?
George, let's not stop, please. Let's go straight to the station.
Now, wait a minute. I better see what it is, but I'll be right back.
George, please! George!
In a few minutes, we'll return with the second act of It's a Wonderful Life. But first, gentlemen, does your hair resemble a dried-out bird's nest full of dandruff flakes? You plaster your hair down like a cheap gigolo, smelling to high heaven.
P.U.! What a stink!
When girls get a gander at the tip-top of your noggin, do they go...
Ew!
Well, here's a friendly hint that may just help you out in the romance department. Starting tomorrow, why not try Kreml Hair Tonic? Yes, siree. You'll be heading for success with Kreml-groomed hair. A success with the gals and on the job. Kreml always keeps hair looking mighty and attractive, always in place. A real sex appealer.
Meow.
Kreml Hair Tonic does lots more than keep your hair handsome looking.
Flop right to ya.
All the pretty girls will scream when you wear Kreml. The swank hair tonic, dandruff will be history. Make it Kreml, the swank hair tonic.
Buy some Kreml today, your hair will thank you. There's much more of It's a Wonderful Life coming right up after this break, so don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Dave Lee here at intermission on WCCO as we continue our live coverage of It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio play. What a special night here, kind of a flashback to old CCO times. Jim Cunningham, one of the actors, is back with me in intermission. Jimmy, we talked about a really cool nugget going back to the original film and radio presentation.
Yeah, the way they used to advertise films in the old days, in 1946, when It's a Wonderful Life came out, was to assemble
members of the cast of that movie, after it opened on a Friday night as a movie, they would broadcast what was called the Lux Radio Hour. And they would do, the stars would gather at a hotel or a theater somewhere in L.A. and create the show again, the movie, in a radio sort of setting. And the Lux Radio Hour was carried by CBS, and CCO certainly was a CBS radio station. So when this originally aired as a radio program with Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed, it probably spilled out over the airwaves that tonight's broadcast is spilling out of.
And as you know, we have a very special guest on the phone here during intermission.
Yeah, I'm absolutely thrilled. It's not unusual for an actor to not have contact with a playwright. So I have not really had any contact whatsoever with Joe Landry, the man who conceived this as a radio play. So I'm thrilled to say hello to you, Joe.
Well, hello to you. Thank you so much.
Joe Landry, let's talk about the origination of this work that you've created.
I should tell you that I actually did two adaptations of It's a Wonderful Life. The first version was not a radio play. It was originally done for a good friend of mine is a high school drama teacher, and she was looking for a stage version of It's a Wonderful Life to do with her students. She knew I was very interested in the film, so she asked me if I was interested in putting something together, and I did. So I wrote a full stage version with 30 actors playing all the characters and more or less putting parts of the film on stage. So so that large-scale production was done for a few years, and then I readapted it as a radio play, and that was done for the first time in 1996 in Stamford, Connecticut.
What would make you take someone's request of writing a stage presentation, which is an awful lot of work, and doing it to the point where you became that passionate about it and created it? What was that relationship that you would jump right into that?
Well, I've actually been, the woman's name is Fran Congella, and I've been friends with her since I was about 6 years old. I took an acting class with her. We remained friends all through the years. My first job was at the film department at Fairfield Public Library back in the days of 16mm, which is where I really became in love with film. And It's a Wonderful Life was part of their collection. So I was kind of working my way through their collection, and it just really stood out to me. That just had such a freshness to it, and there are still some shots in that just seemed very modern. So anyway, I have been writing at that point. I've been writing some short stories, and I'd always been really interested in theater as well. So when Fran asked me to write a stage version, I'd already written some other things at that point. So I really accepted the challenge and was really interested to do it.
Do you have any sense of how many productions of It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio play, are being done across America at this moment?
I don't know about this moment specifically, but this season there are about 100, I think.
Well, it's an opportunity here, Joe, hopefully, you can have the old 50,000-watt blowtorch of WCCO on and hear it on the radio, because we'll also have it on our radio.com on the app. So hopefully you can hear it from a radio perspective.
In fact, the rebroadcast is Christmas Eve at 5 o'clock. So turn off your lights and sit around your Christmas tree, Joe, with a bowl of popcorn and enjoy.
Well, I look forward to telling my friends about that for sure.
Joe, outside of this now, what will you be doing starting in January? What kind of things are you working on?
Well, I actually just wrote a radio play version of A Christmas Carol, which we debuted this season here in Connecticut. And then another project that I've been working on for the past year is based on the story behind The War of the Worlds, that radio broadcast. And it's not a radio play per se, even though it does contain the radio play. It is the story about everything that happened around the radio play.
Fascinating. Yeah, it'll be terrific. We look forward to that. It's wonderful to have you on at intermission of this performance as we carry it live on WCCO Radio. Joe Landry, the creator, and Jim Cunningham, the actor and producer here in Minneapolis, St. Paul. We'll be back on the radio in just a few minutes with the second half of It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio play here on WCCO.
Oh, buttermilk sky.
This is Henry F. Potter, a war-frustrated old man, George Bailey's arch-nemesis. Yes, that Henry F. Potter, the scurvy little spider. I used to think people didn't like me very much, and that was all right because I didn't like them either. But it turns out I just couldn't hear them. I was using a large funnel in my ear. People had to shout into it. No wonder I was angry all the time. Well, not anymore. I went to Sound Point Audiology, a division of Starkey Hearing Technologies, and now I hear Christmas carols, children laughing, sleigh bells ringing. Hearing is wonderful, and Starkey Hearing Aids will help. It can change your life. Check this out. Oh, George, here's that $8,000 you lost.
What?
That's exactly what I used to say, George. Go to Sound Point Audiology and let them help you find the perfect Starkey hearing aid. Remember, no man is a failure who has friends, and you'll hear yours a whole lot better with Starkey and Sound Point Audiology.
And this is Mike Lynch here at the St. Paul Hotel, and we're listening and watching and enjoying It's a Wonderful Life. What a great presentation, and it's fun to be here. It's fun to be part of it. I was your official weatherman on the radio here, but John Williams is here. We're just having a great time, and with such a festive audience here. Let's talk to this young lady. Ma'am, what's your name?
Diana.
Diana, where are you from?
Bloomington.
Bloomington, and your better half was going to talk to me, but he deserted me.
That's right.
He's buying us a drink, right?
Right.
Is that the case?
Sure.
What do you think of this place?
I like it.
Isn't it cool?
A lot of fun.
In all my time, I've been at WCCO Radio for 35 years, and believe it or not, this is the first time I've ever been involved on an on-air play.
You have, huh?
This is the first time.
That's great.
Wonderful. So, anyway, it's going to be a great act, too, here, and John Williams is doing a good job.
Yes, he is. He's doing excellent.
Very good. Very good. Well, thanks for joining us here, and we'll get your old man to come back here. I think he's getting me a beer, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Okay, very good. All right, well, let's take a look at some weather here and some sports. I got to tell you some bad news here. Not far away at XL Energy Center, the Wild are losing to Nashville 3-2 in the second period. And as far as the weather, well, it's still cloudy as usual. 32 degrees right now, and we're looking at probably nearly steady temperatures the rest of the night. Overnight lows should be not much colder than we are now. And like it was all day today, there might be a little bit of drizzle. There might be a little bit of light snow. Maybe a little freezing drizzle. Nothing drastic, though. We have no watches or warnings anywhere. And then it looks like tomorrow, pretty much the same deal. Cloudy skies again. Maybe a little warmer, mid to upper 30s. Again, a little drizzle, a little light snow. It's Monday. That could get a little bit wild, but nothing too bad. It looks like just mainly rain showers around here. And it looks like at times it could be mixed with a little bit of snow and a little bit of sleet. But, again, doesn't look like anything drastic. It's tomorrow night, Monday night, rather, into Tuesday. That's when we could have a little bit of action, a little bit of accumulation. I think there could be several inches up in the northern part of the state. Down here in the southern part of Minnesota, probably an inch or so. But that's really about it. It looks like definitely colder weather's coming in for Christmas. And it looks like we're going to see definitely much colder weather next weekend. We got Johnny Williams here. Johnny, you're doing a great job, buddy.
Oh, thanks, Mike. It's terrifying, but we're having fun. It's a great audience. A lot of our listeners are there.
In my 35 years at CCO, I've never been part of this. This is really cool.
It really is. It's throwback, too, isn't it? I mean, this is the way they did it 50 years ago. And didn't you love the jingle? Did you talk about the jingle?
What you're doing with your radio on to
WCCO.
I'm glad they got better singers here than us. All right, we're down to 1 minute here. 1 minute, and again, we're looking at a great second act here. Boy, I tell you, the guy who plays George Bailey, he's great.
Yeah, and Jim Cunningham, who plays many of the characters. One thing that's lost on our radio audience is maybe the fact that many of those voices are the same person, Jim Cunningham. The cast is just great.
Unbelievable. I like the guy who plays Potter. Wow, he's good.
Yeah, he is. He's got all the voices down, so... You know, I find myself getting kind of swept up in the emotion of this thing, too. I hope that's coming through on the radio because it really is fun.
And I think it is. And it's just a great experience. And it's something like turning the clock back. And it's just a great old time. Well, again, good luck. You've got a big part here in Act Two. So we'll let you get going.
I just got a little narration, so I'll leave it up to the professionals.
Oh, your big job. All right, thanks. 32 degrees right now at WCCO. Again, high tomorrow should be about 38. And we're going back to Dave Lee. He's going to tell us more about what's going on. Thanks for joining us here on WCCO.
Dave Lee back with you on WCCO. It's intermission time for our first ever live version of It's a Wonderful Life. Hope you're enjoying it, the radio play. Now, as you've been hearing, this is a live play, live actors, voices, even sound effects. And the man in charge of all of that is Chris Whiting, and he joins us now. Chris, you wear quite a few different hats in the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your roles in the show?
Yes, I play the stage manager, a guy named Skip Watson, who is in charge of the production, shepherding the actors who play all the different characters, Mary and George and so on. But I also do all the live sound effects. So I'm slamming doors and breaking bottles and banging stuff around and blowing whistles and all kinds of things in addition to the characters that I play. So I'm in constant motion. It's a lot of fun.
How does one become a sound effects person?
Well, it helps to have a friend who offers you a part in their production. That was really the trick for me. And then we started monkeying around in rehearsal and trying to find things. You know, there's people walking in snow and there's cars driving past and sirens and whistles and horns and door slamming. And we added some things and we took out some things that were kind of distracting to the story. The sound effects and the piano music and so on is there to enhance it, not compete with it. So you want to be able to close your eyes and listen to it as if it's happening right in front of you. And so I think we've done a pretty accurate job of that. And some of the things that we use to make the sounds don't look like that's what it would be, but it works.
How do you prepare as an actor, and yet how do you set the stage up, and who does it for you to make sure all the sound effects are in place when you need them?
Our stage manager, Brent Thompson, bless his heart, took a picture of the set last year when I had everything right where I wanted it to be. So when we come in now, he's already set everything in place. And I do a last-minute check. I've got a kind of a traffic pattern that I follow as an actor and a sound effects artist because I want it to look like it's a flow. I don't want to be scrambling around and knocking stuff over and frenetic. I want it to be a fluid, moving thing. So that's part of the actor performance, is getting to the sound effects parts in some sort of efficient traffic pattern.
How has that evolved since you did the first performance?
Well, the first time it was like throwing a bunch of plates in the air and trying to catch as many as you could. I was all over the place.
Yeah.
I was knocking over furniture and banging into stuff. And some of the comedy in the show is that there are a few accidents that happen that we cover. And so if you have real accidents, that takes away from that. So I really try to button it down. I want it to be very precise so that the audience is seeing what I want them to see and hearing what I want them to hear, so that when an accident happens, so to speak, I'm controlling that for maximum comedic effect or theatrical effect.
You, as you mentioned, cannot lose focus.
No, I got to stay locked in pretty well. One thing that's also helped as we've done this is our 9th year, as you know, and so I now pretty much know the whole story without, you know, depending on my script constantly. When we first started, you know, part of the device of the play is that we carry our scripts. But I need both hands most of the time to do what I'm doing. And if I'm holding the script, it used to be my security blanket. I carried it with me all over the stage. And now I pretty much put it down and I know I can turn 30 pages ahead to my next area where it's really going to be important for me to have that there.
Well, Chris, congrats on the success through the 9 years. As I told Jimmy, it's evidenced by sold-out shows, again here tonight.
It is the best job I've ever had. For 9 years, none of us, at least I'm not, tired of it. I look forward to it all year long, and when we get to the St. Paul Hotel and everybody knows us and they treat us like kings, it's just wonderful. And I really get a kick out of, we had some seniors in for a matinee the other day, and I thought, well, we're going to have to be loud and make sure that they can hear us and everything. But those are the people who listen to shows like this on the radio in the 40s and 50s, and they really respond to it. And they come out after the show and shake our hands and say, you know, this was just wonderful. And it's kind of neat to see younger people come who've seen the movie, some who haven't seen the movie, and say, I got to see the movie now.
Yeah.
And so everyone comes at it from a different frame of reference, but it seems to touch everybody.
Chris Whiting, he's an actor and also the all-important sound effects guy. In the presentation, It's a Wonderful Life,